Proverbs chapter 17. Better is a dry morsel, a dry crust of bread. Not just a piece of bread, but one that's been lying around. You know, the crust that you're tempted to throw away. There's nothing, you know, you put it, it's already toasted. You can't put it in the toaster and you can't put enough margarine on it to moisten it. Better is a dry morsel with quietness than a house full of feasting with strife or fighting. And that's a truth, isn't it? If you were raised in a fighting home, man, give me a crust of bread and a glass of anything, and I'll be happier than a fight around the table. And so, just the tranquility in the home, much better than a home full of all kinds of great material things, and yet everyone's fighting. And so quietness, the superiority of quietness to strife. Because when you're fighting at the dinner table, it just doesn't digest that well, does it? You ever eat a meal and then decide to take on controversial subjects, i.e. personalities of others at the table in the course of a meal or something, you know? It just all kind of stops right here. You just got that big old roast just sitting, right? It just doesn't move. And so surely there's a little bit of wisdom here in this first verse too about, you know, not addressing volatile issues at the dinner table. I mean, there are better times. You worked hard, spent good money for that food, eat it, and then go take a walk and address the more volatile issues, you know, but don't address it at the table. It just ruins everything. A wise servant will rule over a son who causes shame and will share in an inheritance among the brothers. And basically what Solomon is saying here is that ultimately character will rise over privilege. You have a son who has great privilege given to him because of his parents. He's given position, he's given power, he's given wealth and all. But without character, he'll lose it all. The servant with character is going to rise above over the long haul. He's going to rise above the one that's been given privilege. And so the lesson is for those that have privilege, is don't throw your privilege away, but don't waste it either. I mean, understand that there's a whole world that would give its right arm for the opportunities that you have. So don't, you know, despise the opportunities. Use them for the, you know, the glory of God, and realize what a line of people would line up to have the chance that you have. So take full advantage of the opportunities that we have, especially for the kingdom. The importance of character over privilege. The refining pot is for silver and the furnace for gold, but the Lord tests the heart. And so silver has to be tested and purified. Gold has to be tested and purified. But there's something more valuable in this world than silver and gold. And it's your heart, and it's my heart in the hands of the Lord. And so he's going to purify it. That means he's going to turn the heat up, and he's going to bring to the surface stuff that you just go, yuck, I didn't know that that was in there, or I just hope that would never come to the surface. You know, hey, there's not a one of us in this room that isn't worse than anything we do. Our hearts are worse than anything we ever do, any expression we give. And so the Lord, he knows that that's in there, and so he refines our heart. He turns the trials up and the different things, and it comes up. And the great tendency, though, is when that happens, it's not our glorious moments. And so to think that, oh boy, now he's through with me. It's over. I'm history, you know. It's, you know, and, you know, remember Pastor Damien Kyle? Yeah, before he did that, yeah, oh, stupid guy, yeah, really, you know. Church was going great, wasn't it? Yeah. You know, but I mean, the tendency when you do something dumb and that thing comes to the surface and, oh, others get to see it, you know, in addition to you sometimes. And then there's the hope there is that he brings it to the surface to remove it, to remove it. And he does. He really invests in our life in a beautiful way. An evildoer gives heed to false lips. An evil person loves lies, and they love scandal. They just love to hear it. And if I love that kind of thing, then it's a reflection of my own heart. A liar listens eagerly to a spiteful tongue. The tongue that hurts other people, you know, a liar just loves to hear that kind of stuff and just to move it on along. It's very, very good when somebody is exhibiting a spiteful tongue and deliberate attempt to hurt other people, to just stop them and say, I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear that. And just to stop it. They may never talk to you again. You'll be better for it. You'll be better for it. You don't want to talk to them anyway until there's repentance, that recognition that this was wrong, and thank you, brother, for stopping me on that thing, but to move away from it. But a liar loves to hear that stuff because he's not interested in the truth, you know. He's interested in just the, sugary kind of stuff or what, the gossip to spread around. He who mocks the poor reproaches his maker. When you mock the poor, that is an indication of pride. It's an indication of pride. The Lord has made both the poor and the rich. He's made them both. And if a person is middle class, or a person is upper middle class, or a person is very, very wealthy, it's okay to be those things in the Lord. And there's great responsibility with having those kinds of resources, but never to see myself above the person that's poor. It never a reflection. Wealth is never a reflection of character. And so never to mock the poor over that kind of a thing. And he who is glad at calamity will not go unpunished. In other words, when God disciplines another person, we're not supposed to rejoice in that. So we see God, you know, he brings out the big hammer on a guy, you know, boom, lays him out. All right, I knew that was coming. Well, anybody could have seen that coming from 100 miles. They had that, none too soon. And there can be that rejoicing over that whole thing. And God says, you know, don't do that. Or, you know, he may be dealing with a guy that's number 15 on his list, and you're down here at about number 300, and he'll move you right to 16. He'll take you on next. And so one of the things that was fascinating is when God used the nations that surrounded the nation of Israel to discipline the nation of Israel, they went too far and they rejoiced in it, and God never forgot it, and he brought judgment on them. We're never ever to rejoice in that kind of thing. It's to be a brokenness, a brokenheartedness related to that thing. Not that God is working and that humility is occurring, but never seeing myself above anyone else as it relates to that. And so we're not to rejoice in those kinds of things and that people go through the calamity and that they go through. Children's children are a crown of old men. And so you just look at an old man around his grandchildren and they are his crown. And so it's just talking about the blessings of a godly family, and the glory of the children is their father. I really like that. The glory of the children is their father. You know, this generation gap thing is a fairly recent kind of deal, and it's something that has had its fullest reign here in the United States and in Eastern Europe, that rebellion of one generation against another generation. But for God, it's not to exist. There's not to be rebellion by one generation against their parents' generation in the Lord, you know. And so the glory of children is their father. And so God wants children to appreciate what their father is and to appreciate what's there and to respect him. And I'll tell you something, there are a lot easier jobs in life than being a father. You think you know everything till you got your own kids. And then we won't worry then because we'll be spending your inheritance. Just kidding. That was last week. Verse 7. I get all my proverbs mixed up. Just stay with me. Yogi Berra here. Excellent speech is not becoming to a fool, much less lying lips to a prince. In other words, these are things that shouldn't go together. You're never going to, you know, if they have a speaker come to MJC Auditorium or something, and, you know, who's speaking this week? You know, the fool. Well, you don't go there expecting him to say something profound or wonderful, because it's not going to happen. You're not going to get excellent speech out of a fool. But there shouldn't be lying lips as a part of a prince. Princes shouldn't be given to lies. How much more ambassadors to Christ? There shouldn't be lies upon our lips. A present, in the King James Version it says a bribe, is a precious stone in the eyes of its possessor. Wherever he turns, he prospers. And so, really, a bribe is powerful. Someone comes up and says, hey, Joe, will you help me out with this problem? Oh, I'm not going to help you out. Hey, Joe, I got about $2,000 in my pocket and, you know, round trip tickets to Rio. Would you help me with this problem? You know, yeah, let's talk about that, and maybe I can find time. And so that bribe, it opens up doors. That's not the way it should be, but that's the way that it is. And so it's a warning for us to be careful of gifts that have strings attached, because if they have strings attached, they're a bribe. So somebody comes and says, you know, here, I'm giving this to you, and by the way, could you help me out? And no, go ahead and take it home, friend. He who covers a transgression seeks love. And so when a person's been sinned against and he covers it, he seeks love. In other words, when he does this, he's like God. That's what God does. He's sinned against all of the time by you and me. And he's so good to cover it, isn't he? And we're like the Lord when we do that, when we will cover sin that's been sinned against us. And one of the things that allows for, it allows room for reconciliation and restoration. If you just kind of keep it quiet, it just kind of goes, you got sinned against, you know what happened, you just let it die inside. Just let it go. Just let it go inside. Don't spread it all around or anything. And then there's real opportunity for reconciliation to occur. But he who repeats a matter, you just spread it all over the place, then you're going to separate even the best of friends. Even the best of friendships oftentimes can't handle that strain. Again, so often, it's not the initial problem that occurs in a relationship, it's what gets said in the midst of dealing with it improperly, when the shouting starts and the yelling starts, and then who tells who this and that, and you have to be careful of that. Wives need to be careful of that as it relates to what they say about their husbands and vice versa. Reproof is more effective for a wise man than 100 blows on a fool. Well, you know, a wise man, you don't have to hit him to get his attention. You reprove him. You just say, this is wrong and this is what needs to happen here. And if he's wise, then he'll listen to that. You won't have to take him out into the stocks and beat him half to death. A fool, and you just got to pound on him to get, you know, to get through to that guy. So the greater wisdom that's there, the less that, you know, that is needed to, in order to correct in a situation. An evil man seeks only rebellion against authority. There are people that are just continually rebellious. Therefore, a cruel messenger, and it's talking about law enforcement, a cruel messenger will be sent against him. And so there is that person that's a rebellious person, and God just says, if you're a rebellious person against authority, then there's an arrest in your future. And that's the way it is. Sometimes you look at, you know, rebellious young people. I've talked with them and you know, they're rebelling against their parents. And their parents are doing a fine job. There's nothing to rebel against there. It's rebellion in their heart. You say, well, okay, you're going to rebel against them. But if you won't learn to submit to them, then you'll rebel when you get your first job, and then you'll be fired at that job, and then you'll rebel at your second job and get fired there, and rebel at your third job and get fired there, and rebel at your fourth job and get fired there. And then it'll be everyone else's fault in the world. The whole world's against you until finally you get arrested. You can't have a rebellious attitude against authority and survive. The systems that are in place are too big. They're going to beat you someday. They're going to whip you. And they're just going to lock you up deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper until I realize that this is my problem. I've got a problem with authority. And the problem is that God has determined that there be authority in this world, that there be government, that there be structure. And so I'm fighting against him so often in that kind of a place. Better to be a teachable person. Let a man meet a bear robbed of her cubs. And just a quick show of hands of anyone that's been in that place. I think maybe Don Louder. Don, have you been in that one of those? Huh? No? Not even Don Loudermilk has. All right. We're purely in the theoretical realm now in verse 12. We don't have a, you know, anyone with any gnosko on this. But you can imagine you meet a bear who's been robbed of her cubs. And what is that? That means your lunch, your history. But you know, there's something worse than that. Running into a fool in his folly. In other words, running into a fool that's in the middle of blowing his top. In the middle of having, in the middle of expressing his temper. In other words, God's saying, when you see a foolish man begin to lose his temper, get out of there. Get away from there as quick as you can and go find a mama bear to wrestle. It'll be better for you. Get between her and her cubs. Whoever rewards evil for good, evil will not depart from his house. And so, you know, people notice when we treat people, when somebody does good to me and then I treat evil back. People notice that. And they have a way of over time repaying me in the same way. We really do reap what we sow on these things. The beginning of strife is like releasing water. And therefore, stop contention before a quarrel starts. And so fights, they usually begin small, don't they? You know, you got a dam. This just starts with a little tiny leak, and it doesn't. It's a little tiny leak, and all of a sudden the water, more and more water starts coming through, more and more water, until suddenly there's a bigger breach in the dam and a bigger breach, and pretty soon the whole thing goes away, and everything behind there comes forth in a, you know, horrific onslaught. And it's the same way sometimes in a argument or a quarrel, isn't it? You talk to someone and say, listen, I just want to talk to you calmly about this, all right? And then you try to talk with them calmly, and they raise their voice a little bit. Well, you can do that too, can't you? So you raise your voice a little bit, and then they raise their voice a little bit, and you raise your voice a little bit, and what do you got? You got that stream going, baby, you got that stream going. And so, and then pretty soon they start to raise, and pretty soon they're yelling, we're the stupidest idiots that ever lived as far as I'm concerned, you know, and then, oh yeah, we'll, you know, take one and no one, and then, well, come up with something better than that. But, you know, and then the whole thing, and then pretty soon, I mean, everybody's just, you know, all explosive and all. And so he says, stop the contention before a quarrel starts. That never ends up doing any good. Now you got to pick up all of the pieces afterwards. And so what's the best way to stop contention before a quarrel starts? Hey, deal with the issue when it's small. And you know what's even better than that? Deal with it before it becomes an issue. Deal with it when it hasn't become a crisis. Now that's got everyone on edge, deal with it then. And it best to deal with problems, and then everyone can stay calmer. He who justifies the wicked and he who condemns the just, both of them are an abomination to the Lord. Calling evil good and good evil, God hates injustice, and he's going to have the final say. He says it's an abomination, and he'll judge it someday. Why is there in the hand of a fool the purchase price of wisdom, since he has no heart for it? So here you got a fool, the picture is a fool, and he's got about $30,000 in his hand. And he's looking to buy some education. But he doesn't want to go to school and learn it, he just wants to buy it. And so here is this, you know, foolish man. He thinks that, you know, wisdom can come easily. It's just kind of quick. You just pay money, and then they, you know, do the Vulcan mind meld on there, and then in it goes, and then you're off and running. And he doesn't realize that wisdom and knowledge, it doesn't come quick and easy. It comes over the long haul, and you can't buy it with money. And then, as he says here, since he has no heart for it, you've got to have a heart for it. It's got to be desired for me to gain wisdom. And so it doesn't, you know, come quick and easy for a price. And yet people want it, don't they? You know, 10 easy steps to being the smartest man in the world. Send $250 too, you know. And I mean, the line forms on that kind of stuff, and it just doesn't work. A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. And so true friends, true loved ones, they stay in there through all of the hard times. And they stay in there even when it means they do all of the giving for a while. And this verse 17 is a beautiful picture of the Lord Jesus. He loves at all times, and he is born for adversity. A man devoid of understanding shakes hands in a pledge and becomes surety for his friend. And so it's again saying, don't co-sign for people. Now, earlier, Solomon wrote against becoming a co-signer on a loan for a stranger. And now he's getting a little bolder. He says, don't even do it for a friend. Why? Because you want him to stay your friend. And so don't even become a surety for a friend. If you can't lend him the money yourself and take the loss, then stay out of it, because there's the potential that it could happen anyway. So, and I like that. It's right next to verse 17. You know, being a friend and loving at all time and being born for an adversity doesn't mean you have to lend money. And so, verse 19, he who loves transgression or sin loves strife, and he who exalts his gate seeks destruction. To exalt my gate is to give myself a premier visual place. In other words, it's kind of like if I build my house up on a hill. Now we're really in the theoretical here. But if I were to live in a city that had hills, I'm not complaining, but if I was, it's okay to build your house on a hill, but if you build your house on a hill just to let everyone know you got a house on a hill and you're better than all of them, hey, that doesn't go so good for the people in the valley. You're just going to make them upset at you, and you might end up with some trouble. So, you know, again, self-exaltation, it's no good. He who has a deceitful heart finds no good, and he who has a perverse tongue falls into evil. A deceitful heart, perverse tongue, both of them lead to evil. Now, I do like this proverb because it brings forth the relationship between the heart and the tongue. Jesus said, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. So often a person says, you know, I just really have trouble with my tongue. I have a problem with my tongue. I have a problem with what I say, you know. And Jesus tells us that really it's a heart problem. What comes out of this mouth of mine, it comes out of that heart. And when what's coming out of my mouth isn't, you know, edifying, isn't good, then something's wrong with my heart. Something's got to be lifted up to the Lord. Lord, cleanse me here on this. And so it's always an indication of a deeper problem in our heart. He who begets a scoffer does to his own sorrow. And I'm talking about parents that have a foolish child. And the father of a fool has no joy. One of the deepest regrets and sorrows in life is to have a child like that, that's a fool. A merry heart does good like medicine, but a broken spirit dries the bones. And so it's physically good to be merry. And, you know, laugh once in a while and all of that. It's just, it's good physiologically for us. And so a psalm that kind of deals with the optimist and the pessimist, that broken spirit dries the bones. It's not good for us physically. So our attitudes can affect how we are physically, our physical health. A wicked man accepts a bribe behind the back to pervert the ways of justice. So if I accept the bribe, then it reveals me to be a wicked man in that action. Wisdom is in the sight of him who has understanding, but the eyes of a fool are on the ends of the earth. And so wisdom, and the man who has wisdom, he puts his focus on the near, what he's got to deal with right now in his life. These are the things that are going to come tomorrow, and these are the things I got to deal with next week. And he's got a near focus to his life, but he also has a far focus to his life. And so he looks near and he looks far as it relates to the issue of his life. And here as he talks about the fool, his eyes are on the ends of the earth. He's a daydreamer. He's a daydreamer. All he looks is to the ends of the earth. He just looks to what, you know, he just hopes it's going to be that way. He dreams about it being that way, but he never deals with anything in the near for what he's dreaming about to come to realization in the far. And so, you know, the daydreamer just fritters their life away and ends up with nothing. Verse 25. A foolish son is a grief to his father and bitterness to her who bore him. Very, very similar to verse 21. Also, to punish the righteous is not good, nor to strike princes for their uprightness. And so when the righteous are being persecuted for being righteous, then it's big trouble. And it's really, really fascinating. You watch as you see the news and you watch the, especially it's easiest to spot in the political arena, but also in the entertainment arena also, and in other areas, but easiest in the political. And you watch now these men and women who try to do the right thing. And they're just vilified. It's vilified. They're, you know, they're persecuted. They're called all kinds of different things, and everything's all twisted around now, the punishing of the righteous. And that's an indication that a nation is in real, real big trouble, despite what the stock market is doing. He who has knowledge spares his words, and a man of understanding is of a calm spirit. And so a wise man is a man that stays calm, and he spares his words. And so that's a good, you know, you get in a hot situation, hey, the calmer you stay, the less you speak usually is the best choice, rather than just starting to yell and scream and all that kind of stuff. Even a fool is counted wise when he holds his peace. You know, a guy can be an absolute fool. I mean, he can be an idiot without peer in the world. And if he never says anything, nobody will know. He goes to the parties, he goes to the out to restaurants, he goes wherever he wants. And if he never opens his mouth, no one knows. You can't spot a smart guy or a wise man and a fool from just the outward appearance. Can't be done. It's reflected when the mouth is opened up. So a fool, if he keeps his mouth shut, hey, everyone's really impressed. I mean, nobody knows that he's a fool. When he shuts his lips, he's considered perceptive. So he can be the dumbest guy in the whole world. Now, it's really sad, because here I am. This is the calling that God has on me. I don't have this option, you know, to stay quiet and be considered wise. But here he is. He can be in there. He can be in some setting. He can be with all of the ambassadors of the world. And he goes in there and he's got his jacket on, his night jacket, and got his pipe and the whole deal and everything. And if he doesn't make a peep all night long, I tell you, they're going to think he's brilliant. No, you know what I'm saying. You get people that come in and everyone else is talking and the one guy didn't talk. And you walk away going, what was that all about? I bet that guy's a brain, you know. Or I bet, man, he must really be something. I mean, it's an impressive kind of a thing, isn't it? And so, I found it to be true, experientially, and whatever. So, see, I'm proving my point here as I just continue to babble and ramble and all. And any of you considering me perceptive at all at this particular point? Chapter 18, a man who isolates himself seeks his own desire, and he rages against all wise judgment. This is talking about the rebel again, the nonconformist. And it's the guy or the woman that finds fault with everyone. I mean, you talk with them, and I mean, nobody can be right. Everybody's wrong. Everybody's stupid, and everybody's this. And hey, when a person comes to the conclusion that everyone is wrong, it's a good time to just stop and look, and it may be the fact that I'm a rebellious person and that you're dealing with a rebellious person. And so oftentimes a person is in that mode simply because there's rebellion in their heart. So if everyone's always wrong, well, you better look at your own heart. A fool has no delight in understanding, but in expressing his own heart. He only likes to talk, doesn't like to listen, just likes to hear himself speak. Now, I think we all do this a little bit to some degree, but you ever have someone talking, you know, and they've gone on like 30 seconds, and it's pretty long for you to listen, and you start to try to get in there, and they keep on going, and I mean, now they've gone over a minute and everything, and you've got all this brilliance to deliver here and everything. And you know how that, sometimes there is that where you something starts to talk, but I'm not interested in listening to you. I've got a lot of things to say on this, and that try to interrupt. I had a guy that I worked on a line crew in Napa for Pacific Bell. That wouldn't be nice. Anyway, it was. I mean, you talk about talking to the side of a truck and all. I mean, but he'd ask things, and I mean, you couldn't get two syllables out, and he was off and running on the next thing, just interested and talking. So when the wicked comes, contempt comes also. So wickedness and contempt are joined together. And with dishonor comes reproach. And dishonor is something that will end in reproach. The words of a man's mouth are deep waters. The wellspring of wisdom is a flowing brook. And so, again, the words of a mouth are deep waters. In other words, it's not just my words. They're revealing something deeper about me, something deeper inside. They're revealing what I'm really about, what I really think, what the attitude of my heart is. It's revealing that kind of a thing. And I love the second part. The wellspring of wisdom is a flowing brook. In other words, when there is a heart that's right before the Lord, when there is a man or a woman that is wise and walking with the Lord, when they speak, it's like a brook coming forth, isn't it? And what the writer what Solomon is saying, for that kind of person, keep talking. Keep talking. We want to hear you talk. You know, and so keep at it. There's a lot of folks you say, don't say anything else until you get some things worked out or whatever. But that other group, I remember talking with Bill McDonald, who taught, you know, here several months ago, and just outstanding, you know, man of God and a teacher of the word and just a sweet spirit. And I just love everything about him. I just really do. And that's who I want to be when I grow up. And I was talking with him, you know, and I was asking him, because he speaks in a lot of different places, and he never tapes anything. And I said, what are you doing teaching anywhere that they aren't taping what you have to say? I said, there's a whole world of men and women who are eager to hear what people like you have to say in the handling of the scriptures. And he's that kind of a guy. You know, you keep talking. You know, don't let and the funny thing is, that kind of person has the tendency to go quiet, don't they? You know, the longer you walk with the Lord and on, you start to go more and more quiet. And so there can be that prodding. No, you keep talking. Let that stream keep coming out of your heart, because we all need it coming into our lives. It's not good to show partiality to the wicked or to overthrow the righteous in judgment. And so don't protect the wicked. Protect the victim. Protect the righteous in these criminal things in judgment. A fool's lips enter into contention. In other words, a fight. A fool's lips are always looking for a fight, and his mouth calls for blows. And so a fool starts to talk, and what's he doing?
Hit me!
And there's just some guys, you just see them, and you just look, and the things they say, the way they say them, and all they're doing is just asking someone to hit them, a good one. Well, we're talking about line crew stories. There was one guy I worked with. His name was Hector. And Hector would come to work, and he's missing fingers and all. This guy was, and he'd come to work, and he'd be beat up or something. And he's just a mountain of a guy. I mean, the other guy must have been dead. And so, you know, why do you go to these places and end up getting in fights? He says, it's how I know I'm alive. I prefer just a pulse, you know, just to take that thing out, you know. Just the fact that I can move my hand like this, that's a sign of life there. Hector, baby, ever thought of that, you know? And so, but we worked a lot together, but that's the way that it was. And he was always provoking, just asking to get his face smashed. And big guys just love to fight. But sometimes, you know, that's what people are calling out for, a fool's lips. Well, I'm sorry, Hector, if he gets this tape, you know, I don't know where he's at. If I come to church next Sunday, I'm all smashed up. We'll know that Hector got the tape. A fool's mouth is his destruction. In other words, it's going to bring destruction to him. And his lips are the snare of his soul. In other words, he's always bringing his life into danger. The words of a talebearer are tasty trifles. And I like that, because I think it's important to recognize that for most of us, you know, gossip is tasty. It's enticing to the flesh. Why do you think the Inquirer and the Star and all those sell a gazillion of things? For accuracy? So that we can learn about what, you know, journalism's really supposed to be like? They're just gossip things. But people love gossip, and our flesh loves gossip. They're tasty trifles. I mean, they're just, the flesh really likes them. The problem is that they go down into the inmost being. We end up retaining them, and we end up remembering them. And it's better not to have them in there to be retained or to be remembered. Again, there's nothing wrong with stopping something and saying, I don't need to know that. I don't want to know that. It's a tasty trifle, but I tell you, I don't want God to have to work that out of my life now once it goes in. And the goofy thing is when that stuff comes in and there's some gossip or some rumor about some person, now you got to deal with that. You got to lift that up to the Lord, and Lord, help me not to judge them in the light of this information and all that's probably wrong and all. Now you got to mess with it. The better just to say, listen, don't tell me stuff like that. He who is slothful in his work, lazy person, is a brother to him who's a great destroyer. And so they're relatives. In other words, it just extolling the wisdom of hard work. It's good to be a hard worker. The name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous run to it and are safe. The name of the Lord, the name referring to the Lord himself, his nature. It's a place of refuge, a place of protection. It's a place of safety. A rich man's wealth is his strong city, and like a high wall in his own esteem. So you have the name of the Lord in verse 10 being a strong tower. The righteous can run to it, whether they're rich or poor, and be safe. And that name of the Lord, hiding under his nature and in him, that's a truly safe place. And in verse 11 is a contrast to it, where the rich man thinks his wealth is a safe place. But it's not a safe place. Only in the Lord is a safe place, and like a high wall in his own esteem. He thinks that it's going to hold up, but it won't hold up over the long haul. Only the Lord can do that. Before destruction, the heart of a man is haughty, and that's a dangerous sign. Destruction's right around the corner. Before honor is humility. He who answers a matter before he hears it, it's folly and a shame to him. In other words, we need to listen first. And listening's a lost art, isn't it? But to get the whole story before we, you know, go off and do something or start to spout off about something that I don't even know what I'm talking about. He who answers a matter before he hears it, it's folly and a shame to him. And I think probably most of us have experienced that, haven't we? Headed into something, we heard a little bit of this and spread, and we knew everything about it, and you know, it confirmed the worst imaginations in our own heart and all started to come, and then pretty soon we were ashamed of our place in all of that, and it was a foolish thing to do. The spirit of a man will sustain him in sickness, but who can bear a broken spirit? So we get physically sick, and if I have my relationship with the Lord, you know, and I'm being kept strong spiritually and emotionally and all, then it can get me through that physical problem. But when my spirit is broken, then there's nothing left there to fall back on. And so the importance is we deal with one another, to deal with one another where we don't break another person's spirit. That means there's got to be hope in the situation. There's got to be a way for restoration. There's got to be a way out. There's got to be hope in there. And of course, because we're Christians and we deal with the living hope, we can always infuse hope into a situation. That God has a will for our lives from this moment forward, and let's listen to his will and let's move forward on that. And so we're going to be careful not to crush a person's spirit so they've lost all hope at all in a situation. The heart of the prudent acquires knowledge, and the ear of the wise seeks knowledge. They're always learning, the wisdom of always learning. A man's gift makes room for him and brings him before great men, but it shouldn't affect us. Again, bribes. The first one to plead his cause seems right until his neighbor comes and examines him. There's another one that I think we've experienced, huh? Where someone comes and they come to you and say, well, I'll tell you, my husband, he's just the worst kind of thing and everything, don't tell you like that. No, by the time she gets done, you're ready to go to hang the guy. Well, that scoundrel, we'll skin him alive before nightfall. And then he comes in, you know, and talks to you, and it's a whole different thing. It's said, man, that's Jim Hurd, you and me, let's go. You know, think, I've been in counseling sessions, nobody in this room. But I've been in counseling sessions where I have had both people in the room, and I cannot, to save my life, get an understanding of the situation, let alone understanding something from one side. You know, there's the old saying is that when you're hearing something, cover one of your ears and hold that one for the rest of the story, and then you'll be able to deal with it properly. So very, very, very good wisdom. Casting lots causes contentions to cease, you know, and so you got these two men or these two kings coming against one another or whatever it might be, and so it would be the casting of the lot, and then whoever won the lot, then, I mean, it was fair and square, everyone had an equal chance, and it's like flipping a coin, you know, you can't, okay, we just submit to the flip of the coin here, and so the contentions will stop because you lost, or there's the understanding that God's gonna direct us in the casting of this lot, and so it's a way for contentions to cease and keep the mighty apart. Well, for us, there's no casting of lots. The best way to do that is to pray together. Come together, pray together, seek the Lord's will together, and it keeps the mighty apart. A brother offended is harder to win than a strong city, and contentions are like the bars of a castle. I'll tell you, with a close friend or a relative, when that relationship splits, that can be one of the hardest relationships to restore. Someone has said that civil wars are always the bitterest. And oftentimes within the family, you know, would personal take and forgive everyone in the neighborhood, you know, but I mean, I can't believe that, you know, so-and-so did that to me. And I mean, that thing just harbors like that. And so it's just a fact that's there. But the Lord can overcome it. A man's stomach shall be satisfied from the fruit of his mouth, and from the produce of his lips he shall be filled. Again, that gracious mouth, that guy that people like to be around, you're going to get invited to dinner, so you're going to eat. You're going to eat good. And so people like to be around gracious people. Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit. And so I think that's another important verse for us. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. When people come to us and they ask us questions concerning the kingdom and what the Bible says about God and the things of God, it's so important to understand that there's life and death in what we say. One of the most awesome things to realize is, and I tell the leaders here in the churches, the home fellowship leaders and the different guys, is that people do actually listen to what we say. And I mean, they can continue their life or end their life based upon what we say to them. But what's true of us is true of everyone. And so there's life and death there in the power of the tongue. But we'll never go wrong giving the Word of God. And when in doubt, grace. When in doubt, grace. And so the power of life and death are in the power of the tongue. Now, spiritually speaking, and perhaps its highest application has to do with salvation. When a person will, with their tongue, confess Jesus as Lord, there's life in their tongue, eternal life. And when a person will take and say, that confess, you know, that they don't want anything to do with him, you know, then there's death in their tongue. And so, you know, what we say, reflection of our heart, eternity hangs in the balance. And those who love it will eat its fruit. In other words, their tongue, love to talk a lot. They better be prepared to take its consequences. He who finds a wife finds a good thing. Isn't that interesting? Finds. I thought it was an interesting word.
I'm just walking along, you know. There she was, just right, waiting to be found. He who finds a wife finds a good thing.
Now that assumes she's a good wife too. So, one of the greatest blessings in life is a good wife from the Lord, and obtains favor from the Lord. The poor uses entreaties when he speaks, but the rich answers roughly, the poor man, he doesn't have any power, so he's careful how he says everything and all, you know, when he goes before the planning commission and all those kinds of things related to the new building and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, and the rich man, he just answers roughly, you know, I mean, he throws his weight around, and sometimes that's a tendency we have to deal with, you know, if we're wealthy. A man who has friends must himself be friendly. I mean, that's just so much uncommon common sense that I just love it. A man who has friends must himself be friendly. You look at people with a lot of friends. You know what the common denominator is? They're friendly. They're friendly. People like to be around them. Sometimes you got people, you know, they're in the church. Pastor, I've been coming here for 1 year, and no one is my friend. And I thought this was the end of my search for a friendly church. You're such an unloving group here in this church. No, maybe they just don't like to be around whiners. Or something. You know, nobody talks to me in the fellowship hall. That really just bothers me with it. You know, I can't understand it, why they don't, you know. Is it the veins that come out on my forehead? You think that bothers them at all, you know? I mean, they're not a friendly vibe coming off of them at all. And they're, you know, and they're just looking, who needs the aggravation? Who needs the aggravation, you know? They just walk away. And the key is to be friendly myself. There are a lot of people looking for friends. But they're looking for someone friendly to become a friend with. And so, beautiful. A man who has friends must himself be friendly, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother, and that's our Lord Jesus. He's not a fair-weathered friend. He sticks closer than a brother.